My name is Rachel Rofe. I created this show because I wanted to help you see that if you have a choice, you can choose a better life. If you're listening to this podcast, you're in a pretty fortunate position. You have free will, ability to connect to the internet, and access to all kinds of new education. This podcast is meant to help you make the most of your good fortune. We talk with all kinds of people here from all walks of life because I want you to see that no matter what your situation, there's always a way to create a life that you're proud of. Hello, everyone. Today we're here with Wes Chapman. Wes has been an entrepreneur since the age of 8 years old and was self-sufficient by the age of 16. Having amazing successes and epic failures, Wes has learned that the most important part of being an entrepreneur is to hold your head up high in your failures and stay humble in your successes. Wes started consulting CEOs of Fortune 500 companies at the age of 19. He's had his work featured in over 350 different industries and been a part of over 5,000 brands. Wes has now changed his direction in life and founded A Human Project, a for-purpose, nonprofit 501c3 with a mission to create a community of empowered youth. Wes's experience in life and his skills in the entrepreneurial community have prepared him for his greatest life mission. I actually met Wes a few days ago when he reached out via email and told me he thought that he'd have a lot of value to bring to A Better Life listeners. I Googled him and I found some extremely impressive things. For example, on one page, he wrote that he had been abandoned at age 1 by his father, then at 6.5 by his mother, and tried to commit suicide 12 times before his 16th birthday. So having gone through everything that he has, he says his mission now is to eliminate the words broken, worthless, and victim from the children's vocabulary that he reaches. So although I don't know Wes too well yet, I just know that he has a lot of great things to say, and I trust that this is going to be a really inspirational and enlightening interview. So Wes, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I feel honored to be on your program and humbled at some of the things you said. So thank you very much for that beautiful intro.
My pleasure. The intention behind A Better Life is something that I think that you really stand for too. And it's just to show people that if they have a choice, that they can choose a better life. And I know that you help people that don't have choices as much. In this spirit, can you just take a minute to share with us just some of the things that you're most proud of in your life?
Well, I have two beautiful children, so I think that that is the first and foremost. You know, if someone were to ask me what's my greatest accomplishment, it's them. And seeing them go through life and learn from both my positive and negative choices. I believe that we're all, so many times we look at our negativity or our mistakes or the things that we did wrong in life and say, oh, I don't want anyone to know about those. I mean, those are learning points for ourselves. And more importantly, those are learning moments for our community. So my greatest accomplishment in life is my children. And secondly, I would say that my greatest accomplishment is actually really in its infancy, which is building A Human Project, our for-purpose mission, our for-purpose organization that is looking to really reach out to youth who are in situations where they may think they don't have control and actually show them how they can truly empower themselves and thus build a community around themselves to enable them to deal with life. Some of the stuff that you mentioned about my past, you know, when people look at my story, and everybody has a story, you know, many times my story is just a drop in the bucket compared to others. But all of us have stories and all of us react to our situations differently. And it doesn't really matter how crazy your life was or how crazy that moment in your childhood was or what you've gone through. It affects you, and how it affects you is the same in so many psychological ways. And I won't get too geeky on people, but in all reality, the brain doesn't necessarily understand the difference between a slap and a punch. I mean, it's still physical pain. The body registers it as pain and physical, but your emotional side of that abuse is still there. And finally, after about 17 years of me teaching this to audiences, science has finally caught up. And that is that when we look at abuse, we tend to put levels on it. You know, we say, okay, you were sexually abused, you were physically abused, you were emotionally abused. So that's a 1, 2, and a 3, right? And if you're at a 3, wow, you know, your life was horrible. But what about the person that was, you know, at a 1? Does that mean their life, that their tragedy, their thing they went through wasn't just as daunting on their personality and on who they are? And science has finally come and said that the brain calculates the same type of, like, if you're sexually abused, your brain registers that and calculates it very similar to if you're neglected or if you're not loved. The chemicals, the way everything works in the brain, it's very, very similar. So my greatest accomplishment is really in the works, and that is teaching people this and teaching people that out of the 51 million children in this country that are abused or neglected on a daily basis, that there's hope, that there is a way for them to break this cycle, you know, the cycle of dysfunction, the cycle of hopelessness, the cycle that they're in, there's a way for them to break it. And it doesn't require mentorship. It doesn't require programs. It doesn't require anything very complicated. It simply requires a community surrounding them, and them being the youth, in a way that if something happens, if I get hit by a bus or something happens to other volunteers in our organization, the community still stays strong. By surrounding each individual with other individuals who are in similar situations who can give similar life stories. So I hope I didn't like roll around in circles there, but kind of give you some things. So
yeah, no, not at all. That was really helpful just to hear more about it. And I love how you mentioned how different things they register to different people. I mentioned actually in another podcast about how I was in a mastermind of people and we were all talking about just things that happened to us from our childhood. And I resonated with you because I had a crazy childhood too. But what I noticed, one of the women there, she started crying and she felt like she had no right to be upset about anything that happened in her childhood because hers was like, she said nothing compared to what mine. And it's like, no, that's not true. You know, like you said, it really depends the different levels compared to different people's personality. And even not just the personality, but like anything, it can register as really traumatic for people. So I love that you say that. And so that actually makes me curious, the people that you work with then, do you work with just all children? You don't have like specific?
We haven't said, you know, okay, this particular abuse, right? Because to your point, what we were just talking about, I call it the Elmo effect. So Elmo the doll, I call it the Elmo effect. And let me explain that. There can be something in somebody's childhood, in somebody's past, and it may not even be their childhood. It may have been, you know, when they were 25 years old. Who knows? There can be that one or two or three events that happened that maybe to the world look very silly, right? Maybe they're not something traumatic like we hear. Maybe something the world would kind of shun away and say, you know, come on, grow up, get a life, you know, those kinds of things. But to that person, it was something very, very traumatic. And why I call it the Elmo effect is it could literally be something as simple as maybe you were 6 years old, 7 years old, and you had a birthday party and you really, really, really wanted an Elmo doll and you psyched yourself up for it. And you really thought you were going to get one and everything was just going to happen. And then your birthday comes and goes and you don't get the Elmo doll. And then maybe there's no communication with your parents, with the people around you, kind of explaining why you didn't get the Elmo doll. And maybe you translate that in a way of neglect and you don't feel good and you feel like you weren't loved and all these things. And then you carry that. And it sounds so ridiculous and it sounds so simple, but I promise you, I've seen it with thousands and thousands of people where you identify some of these issues. Like I said, it's not this way with everyone, but you identify some of these issues, some of these small things, and they're able just to release them and just kind of let them go. And they open up and it's like, wow, I've been carrying that around. And it becomes almost comical to them and they just let it go. And it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's the Elmo doll, you know, then they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I let that hold me back all these years. Or if it's something as severe as child abuse, they go, wow, I can't believe that I let that abuser who abused me for 2 or 3 years or 2 or 3 summers control my life for 20 or 30 years. And so it doesn't really matter. The brain is a weird little computer that doesn't really care about what the level of trauma is, but if it affects us in a trauma way, it's something that creates some malfunctions, but the super highways aren't working as well. So that's to that point, which I really want to hammer in with the audience, because I agree exactly with what you said. Too many people don't communicate their feelings or their fears or their pain because somebody else like me or you or whoever else gets up on a stage and says, oh, listen to my life and listen to how horrible it was. And then they go, wow, I have nothing to complain about. I just need to be quiet and just sit here and deal with my own stuff. And that's not healthy. And so to your second point about the youth, our target audience, I mean, our quote unquote, our sweet spot is between the ages of 11 and 14. That's where we feel we can have the biggest impact because that's that age group that's kind of coming out of being a child and going into being a young adult. There's a lot of social things that happen in that point. You're going into high school, you're leaving middle school, you're leaving grade school, you're kind of leaving some of the things behind, but you're still not, maybe you haven't made all those decisions like teen pregnancy or massive, you know, drug addictions or anything like that. So there's still time to kind of help you re-energize your life and really move you forward. But with that said, we work with youth on both sides of that spectrum. You know, as far as the psychological target, we're looking and we're attracting youth that are in hopeless situations, broken homes, father's an alcoholic, maybe isn't around very much, maybe mom has to work two jobs just keep the family afloat. We have everything from homeless youth, youth that just got out of juvenile detention, youth living in two or three different homes because of step-parents and because of this and that. I mean, it's really just the youth that don't have that stability and are really living kind of a more dysfunctional lifestyle.
So you mentioned the Elmo effect, which I think is really a great point. And I'm curious, for people who are listening, if they have children or children in their life, is there a way that they could kind of help in advance before this Elmo effect accumulates?
There are really simple ways in life to, you know, have a good life. As human beings, we want everything to be complicated because it really gives us that internal like pleasure that, aha, we solved the problem, right? And it was so complicated. And if you look at Thomas Edison or Albert Einstein or whoever else is a great individual on the planet, they simplify things and that's how they found solutions. The brain is no different. And this family communication is where it starts. So I don't care if you're a single mother, if you've got mother and father, I really don't care what that situation is. These things can be prevented very easily by talking to your child and really listening. I mean, what's the true definition of communication? Listening. It's not talking. So really listen to your child's fears, their concerns, set boundaries. You know, I mean, again, some people will be like, oh my gosh, well, if I give my child everything I want, and that's not what it's about. It's simply about listening to the child's fears, listening to their feelings. As quote unquote childish as they may be, to them, it's a reality. You know, to them, that is their life. That's their reality. And being heard teaches them that when they have feelings, when they have these emotions, they can talk about them. And once you talk about anything, I mean, just as an adult, sit around and think about how amazing it is to talk to a friend when you've had a bad day, or how amazing you feel after you talk to, you know, a counselor or whatever it is. And we pay millions of dollars, billion-dollar industry right now, the self-help world. We spend billions of dollars as an adult population to feel better. And really all we're wanting to do is be heard. So if you can teach that to your child at a very young age, that, hey, you didn't get the Elmo doll, well, let me explain to you why. And don't sugarcoat things. I think that as parents, we try to protect our children too much. And sometimes you need to say, hey, the reason we couldn't get the Elmo doll was because I couldn't make it to the store in time for your birthday and it didn't happen. Or, you know, hey, we're struggling financially. I'm trying to give you the best that I can. I really do love you. I really do care about you. Of course, keep boundaries again, but really start that communication pattern. And that's going to help them throughout their entire life so that they know that they can communicate. And especially young daughters, they know they can communicate their feelings and their emotions. And so they don't get into situations where maybe they get a boyfriend and they've got something going on and they're trying to prove to that boyfriend that they love them and you know where I'm going with this. And they make wrong mistakes. Same thing with men, you know, teach them that, hey, it's okay to have feelings. It's okay to cry. It's okay to, you know, you can still be a man by expressing your feelings and who you are. So really simplified. I mean, it's just communication and just listening.
You know, as you say that, I was thinking about my best friends. Two things popped up in my mind. First of all, my best friend is one of the only people, I think actually maybe the only person I've ever met who, when you talk to her about her parents, she has absolutely no baggage, no complaints. She's just super in love with her parents. And I remember I went to visit her childhood house with her and we found this letter that her father had written her. And basically she was like, I don't know, junior high and she had wanted to model. And her father, they wouldn't let her model. They said, no way. But we found this letter where basically he wrote her a letter about why he wasn't letting her do it. She's like, I love you very much. Here's the reasons why we don't want you to do it. Hope you're not upset, but you know, here's the thing. And I was just so impressed and blown away to just see that she had her feelings acknowledged. That matters so much. So
it does. And the problems that we're seeing is that, and this isn't something that's happened over 5 years or 10 years. This has really been going on. I mean, if we really want to get into it, it's been going on since the mid-40s. We're starting to accept things that shouldn't really be acceptable. You know, we're starting to accept divorce. We're starting to accept a broken home. We're starting to accept single parenting. We're starting to accept so many things that really start creating chaos in the fabric of humanity and start creating chaos in the fabrics of quote-unquote normality. And then we're not addressing those and we're not explaining those and we're not really having that conversation and we're not being honest about certain things. And then thus, children have been over the years interpreting on their own. And again, that would be like sitting a five-year-old in front of a nuclear bomb and saying, hey, go ahead and try to figure this out. And the five-year-old saying, I have no idea. Well, here's a pair of scissors and here's a blowtorch. Go ahead and figure this nuclear bomb out. See you later. I mean, none of us would even dare do that, right? We know that we would just completely ruin everything about who we are and blow up our city and everything else. Well, in so many ways, we've done that with our psychology and our need to protect children, our need to whatever with them, and not really just kind of having that open conversation. So back to your friend, that open letter probably meant more to her. Of course, she was upset that she wasn't a model, but then she saw, and I'm just assuming that some of the things is why he didn't want her to be a model was some of the worldly model things. He didn't want her to get into that world and have her heart broken or have things happen to her to make decisions or whatever his decisions were. But that probably made her say, you know what? My dad really loves me. He respects me and he cherishes me as who I am as a female and wants me to cherish my body and cherish my existence as a person. And I guarantee you that has translated into, if she's married, into her relationship where she is that much more giving to her husband because of that act. So I could be totally wrong, but.
No, those were definitely some of the reasons. She's not in a relationship yet, but I know that when she is, she will definitely be a phenomenal partner. And the other thing that I wanted to call attention to is you mentioned about just being able to speak the things that are kind of in your head. And I know even as an adult, so I think for everyone listening, realize that this makes sense for other adults in your life too, is just being able to speak what you have shame about is so liberating. I know, like for me with my mastermind, if I have something that's going on that maybe I have shame about, or even if it's not even shame, just like I remember a couple months ago, I was helping my boyfriend hold an event and we had a whole bunch of different things going on and we had his event and then I was flying out somewhere and a million other things. And I just remember going on Facebook. We have a Facebook group and just going on and on and on about all the things that I was stressed about that were frustrating me. And just as soon as I was able to get it all out there, it just fizzled out. It's like, phew, I was heard. This is great. Same thing with things that I've been extremely ashamed about. I just went through and same thing, like when people say to me things that they're really ashamed about, that they're really scared to say, just that spirit of being vulnerable. Once you're heard, you just are able to free up so much more energy and able to move on to be the next best level of yourself.
You are. And it's amazing how liberating that is. And the marketing world created everything you just said, being vulnerable, being honest, all these things is now buzzwords. But really, on a psychological level, what that does for the individual is absolutely, I don't think there is a human word that we can, or an English word, excuse me, that we can associate with it, because it's beyond liberating. It's beyond exhilarating. But once you have that storage full of waste and depression and anger and pain and guilt and sadness and shame and all these negative things, once you're able to express them in a very controlled way and doing it with the right intentions, all of a sudden it's like literally you have a car on your body and it just disappears. The car just, you know, disintegrates and it's gone. And you're able to just breathe again in such an easy way. And then all this enlightenment comes to you and you really get to, you know, go through it. And that's exactly what we teach the youth. You know, let it go. So as you mentioned in the intro, I hate the words fixed. I hate it when somebody says, oh, we'll fix that person. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that person. They're not broken. You know, this isn't a freaking China doll that fell on the ground and you need to put some super glue. That's not what's going on here. And I hate this whole concept of being a victim. You know, look, you're only a victim at the moment in which the action takes place. After that, you have total control. I think we just like to say, well, I was a victim of this. You know, well, yeah, you are. But by continually acknowledging it in that way, you're just giving power right back to the action. So, you know, for me personally, I went through all forms of abuse between the ages of 0 and 19, but really my hardcore abuse was between the ages of 0 and 7, well actually 1 and 7 after my father left and my mother attached herself to another man. And it wasn't until I was 16 years old, you know, I had kind of an aha moment. I was on 20 plus pills a day. My liver failed at 16 years old after being on these pills for about 11 years. My liver completely failed. They gave me three options in life. Number one, hope and pray you can get a liver transplant. Number two, we'll drain all the liquids out of your body, blood, everything, you know, and try to recycle it and try to cleanse your liver. And number three, pray to God that you're going to live. And I picked number three because the other two options were just financially, timing, all that stuff. It just wasn't going to work in the situation I was in. And so I had that moment by myself in my room, I'll never forget, where I had to make a decision of all the abuse, all the things, all the victim mentality that was sitting in my head. I had to say, you know what? For 10 years, this man has still been touching me, has still been beating me, has still been hurting me. And I've let him do that because I've allowed myself to be a victim. No more. I'm not going to be a victim anymore. When I made that mental shift, everything started to move in my life. It didn't happen overnight. Still, you know, even to this day, I still have to continually work through and remember things, but it was an instant shift. And since that moment, I dropped all the pills I was on. I was labeled with everything under the sun. I was told I'd never drive a car, never have a girlfriend, never have a normal job, never be an asset to society. I mean, imagine getting that diagnosis at 13 years old. I mean, it was all of this stuff that was plowed on top of me. And I just said, no, this isn't my reality. I'm not going to play victim anymore. And I've never taken a pill since that day, and 33 now, so whatever that math is, you know, I've never taken another pill again. I constantly have to, you know, be working on different things. Of course, there are things that happened in my past that affect who I am. I don't allow them to control me. And in fact, I have a quote that I really hammer in with the youth, is that the choices of our yesterdays have direct impacts on our todays, but don't define our forevers. And I know that's grammatically, you know, got so many things in it, but what it means is things that happened to us yesterday definitely affect us and impact our lives today. That's true. If you break your arm, you know, today, tomorrow, you're still going to have a broken arm. You don't have to let that affect you forever. You don't always have to remember the pain of the broken arm and whine and complain about having a broken arm. It's like, you know what? I have a broken arm. There's nothing I can do about it. It's broken now. Let's make the best of it and let's move forward with life. And you're always going to remember you had a broken arm. But you don't always have to live in that moment of pain, of regret of maybe doing something or whatever. And I hope that resonates with your audience. And that's such a valid point. And that's the first transformational piece we do with our youth, is pulling them out of these words that they're so accustomed to using, these words that really feed the system, feed the programs, feed the dependency. And we break that and we say, look, no, this isn't your reality.
That's beautiful. So do you have any examples of when you're talking to a child, maybe even something where they were using this kind of terminology and you were able to shift it, and the example, and then also how they shifted it, like what happened through it?
Yeah, I've got hundreds of examples. You know, one that when you say that comes to mind is of a young man that we have in our system. I openly cry, so I want the audience to know that. I am very in tune with my tears. I cry in Rudy, and I've cried in Finding Nemo. So if I tear up in telling these stories, it's simply because that's who I am. We have a young man in our program who is homeless, and he and his mother are homeless. And his mentality over the last, they've been homeless now for, officially homeless, without living in a residency for almost 2 years now, but they've been dealing with homelessness, bouncing to and from relatives for about 6 years. So it's been a long journey in this young man's life, and he's in his teens. And so when I first met him, he was very, very shy, but more so full of shame. His father left when he was very young, and his father is doing okay, meaning he has a home, he has a place to live. He's on the other side of the country. His father doesn't pay child support. His father's not a part of his life in any way, shape, or form, except for occasional phone calls to make sure he's still homeless. And I know that sounds really low, but that's what he does. And so this particular boy was in a very, you know, woe is me, I'm homeless, my life is, you know, kind of a dark position, but trying to live a light life. That makes sense. You know, he was hiding his homelessness. In fact, many of his schoolmates didn't even know he was homeless until this last summer. That's how he got into our program. But anyway, so his mindset was all about, I can't, I shouldn't, I am, I'm the system, I'm the victim. This is who I am. This is my reality. And we were able to spend about 2 hours with him, talking to him and talking him through the word can't, something so simple. Now, with this shame for him comes this total lack being able to share his existence with the planet. Not just share his story, but literally his existence. He's an incredibly talented young man. He loves to play the guitar. He wants to learn how to sing. He's an amazing writer. Grammatically, he's got a lot of stuff that he's working on for obvious reasons. But just his creative space, being able to write poetry, is phenomenal. I mean, the guy could be a songwriter and write hit songs right now on the radio. So he's got all these gifts to give the world, but yet his shame, his fear, his mentality of victim is holding him back from doing any of that. So just recently, I was able to work with him one-on-one in our program. He came to one of our affiliate partners' three-day events, and he was there with his mother. And his mother was very similar in concept and, you know, just kind of trying to survive mentality. He came to the event, and we spent, I don't know, between the volunteers that helped, myself and other people, probably spent 12 to 13 hours one-on-one with him and his mother, talking to them about shifting the mindset from I can't, to I can, shifting the mindset from victim to I control some things. You know, I don't need to be dependent on the government. I don't need to be dependent on disability. I don't need to be dependent on these things. I can actually create my own futures. And even though I'm exhausted, even though I've been battling this for years and I've been fighting this uphill battle, there is hope. There is a chance. There is a way for me to go the extra distance to make this happen. So, giving you the background, in that 3-day time period, they literally, and especially our youth, made a huge shift. Such a huge shift that he was able to perform live on stage to about 15 different people and then record that and allowed us to play it live in the auditorium, in which there was about over 400 people at this event, with him being in the room and able to share his vocal talent, his writing skills. He wrote a very short, like about a 45-second little poem to his mother and wrote the song, chords to it, all that fun stuff, worked with one of the volunteers at the group, and was able to perform this piece in front of all of these people. And more so, after the performance and after everybody knew who he was and, you know, kind of was wanting to come up and say hi to him, he was able to conduct conversations with these people and actually have conversation back and forth, not just about his circumstances, but about what he was going to do in life and where he was going to go in life. And just recently, with all of that mind shift and all of that movement in their energy, they have gone from living in a very dark and kind of, I called it a step above a KOA park ground. They're now moving into a much better situation, and we're putting together a plan to actually get them independent and living in their own apartment without just quote-unquote volunteer or donation or government support. They're actually looking to build income strategies, to rebuild some of the passions in life that his mother had. And more importantly, he now is seeing how powerful his thoughts can be, how powerful he can be just by changing the simplest things of I can't to I can, and I'm not a victim. I'm actually in control of my own destiny, and I'm actually in control of my own life. And so that just happened recently, and it was an amazing, amazing shift, and I'm not even doing it justice, but it was an amazing shift in just the psychological patterns that have been created over a 6-year period of time, and even longer, where I believe his father had left him 9 years ago. So, you know, obviously he's been kind of creating these patterns in his mind. Change is instant. I want people to know that. You can make a change instantly. It's the habit of maintaining the change that takes time. And that's where the support needs to come in from a community. Somebody makes a decision, I don't want to smoke anymore. That's instant. You know, snap of the fingers, I don't want to smoke anymore. Continuing that goal and building the habits of not smoking, that may take 10 years, 5 years, 12 years, depending on the person. But the concept of changing, that's instant. And so when you're talking about psychological patterns, those can instantly be broken. Those can instantly be changed. But then you have to have the community reinforcing that behavior and creating the habits behind it. And that takes time. And there's no getting around that. It takes time to reprogram, to rethink, to remap your brain and kind of move forward from there. So that's one example. And then I have other examples of youth who are building that, like I said in the very beginning of the interview, that empowerment shield around them so that when they go into their circumstances, that was my aha moment when I started the Human Project. Was I've done volunteering for prisons and homeless shelters and foster care facilities and boys' homes. I've done those for years, probably about the last 10 years I've been involved in some capacity and something like that. And it wasn't until I had this aha moment in a public school where my 15-minute speech ended up being almost 4 hours. And that's where, you know, these youth, over 200 youth came up to me one after another telling me their stories of abuse, of abandonment, of issues, of pain, of sexual abuse, physical abuse, all these things. And then it was probably the third or fourth child in, and the bell rang and they were like, oh, I got to get home. I got to leave. And my question was, wait, where are you going? Well, I'm going home. It's my father I was telling you about. Please don't tell anyone. That's when the light hit me. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, these children are still stuck in this situation. And the way the system works, you know, the system can't help them. The system's overloaded with XYZ. We need to create something where these children can learn the coping skills, the mechanisms, they can get the education, the empowerment. So when they go back into these situations, they can deal with it. You know, our little boy who's homeless, he didn't leave the event with a home. He left the event going back into his homeless state, but he also understood what power he had and how he now controlled the outcomes of his life, not some government or some phone call or some caseworker, but he could actually start controlling the outcomes in his life. And now he has empowerment going back into his situation so he can deal with and solve his own issues. I hope